श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नीति नाम नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे भगवानी प्रचारे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादिशतारिणे नाना शास्त्र विचारिणैक निपुणो सद्धर्म संस्थापको लोकानाम हितकारिणो त्रिभुवने मन्नो शरण्या करो राधा कृष्ण पदारविंद भजनानंदे नमस्तानको वंदे रूप सनातन रघुजुगो श्रीजीव गोपालको श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाशलि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे कृष्णा सो आई वेलकम यू ऑल टू दिस सेमिनार टीचिंग ऑफ Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Especially we will be dealing with Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching to Srila Sanatana Goswami.
There's nothing to feel sorry about.
So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching is very important, especially for us, those who are the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And not only for us, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching is very important for anyone who is interested about spiritual life, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings are the summary of the entire Vedic wisdom. Mahaprabhu summarized the Vedas and gave it in the most sublime form, in the form of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Some other time, if we have the opportunity, we'll discuss how the Vedas actually expanded from pranav, the sound vibration that Brahma received from Krishna is the pranav, omkar. And from that omkar, the wisdom expanded in the form of Gayatri, and then it further expanded in the form of the entire Vedas. And then this wisdom converged into the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So we can see, like in the beginning of creation, the sound vibration came in the form of pranas, and from that the entire Vedas expanded, and then the entire Vedic wisdom converged into the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself didn't write anything. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not give anything in the written form. He just spoke, and he simply asked everyone to chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Jare dakho, tare kaho, Krishna upadesh. And Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama iva kevalam. This was Mahaprabhu's teaching. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching was given he personally gave Shikshashtakam. He simply explained what the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is. In the form of this 8 verses, Shikshashtakam. But he gave the teachings to some of his very intimate associates in different occasions. Mainly to Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Ramananda Roy, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. These are the personalities Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally gave different aspects of the Vedic wisdom. He revealed different aspects of the Vedic wisdom to these personalities. And this especially the 6 Goswamis explained Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings in elaborate way, giving the evidences from the scriptures. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just spoke and gave the essential understanding, but for the posterity, the Goswamis, 6 Goswamis, who are these 6 Goswamis? Rup Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and Sri Jiva Goswami. So these 6 Goswamis are the principal propounders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally instructed Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami are two very, very special personalities. They were the ministers of the government of Bengal at that time. And not only some ordinary ministers, they were the Prime Minister and the Finance Minister, the Chief Minister and the Finance Minister. Sanatana Goswami was the Chief Minister and Rupa Goswami was the Finance Minister. So these are the two most important positions in the government were held by these two personalities. And they were also elder in age, elder than others, other 4 Goswamis. And the other Goswamis actually accepted them as their preceptors, as their teachers. And out of them all, Rupa Goswami holds a very special position, because Rupa Goswami presented the essence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. But in order to understand Rupa Goswami, we have to approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings through Sanatana Goswami. Because what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave through Rupa Goswami is the most lofty understanding of Krishna consciousness. But through Sanatana Goswami, the philosophy was presented step by step. So Sanatana Goswami, because he was the Chief Minister of the King of Bengal at the time, when he wanted to resign, the King was very upset. The king was Muslim, and still he had Sanatan Goswami, a Hindu Brahmana, as his chief minister. And because Sanatan Goswami accepted a job in the Muslim king, under the Muslim king, he was ostracized by the Brahminical society of Bengal at that time. Actually, this depicts how narrow-minded the society was in India at that time. The Hinduism at that time came to a very, very degraded condition. And especially the Brahmanas, they were exploiting people in the name of religion. And it was very, very unfortunate condition. And at a time like that, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to uplift the society and give them the perfect understanding, perfect spiritual understanding. So when we see the social condition at that time, we can see that it was so bleak and ominous. And at a time like that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and gave the most profound and most magnanimous spiritual philosophy. He included everyone and did not want to exclude anybody. So Sanatana Goswami, although he was a very, very elevated Brahmana and a great devotee from his childhood, actually he is a Nitya Siddha, he is an eternally liberated soul. Who is Sanatana Goswami in Krishna's pastime? Which Manjari? No, Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari. Sanatana Goswami is Ananda Manjari. And Sanatana Goswami he is an eternally liberated soul, and also from his childhood we can see his behavior was extremely exemplary. When he was a little boy, once he had a dream that a Brahmana came to him and offered him the Bhagavatam. And in the morning, literally a Brahmana came to him. One Brahmana came to him and gave him a Bhagavatam. And since that time, Srimad Bhagavatam was Sanatana Goswami's lifelong companion. He said, Madeko Bandhu, my only friend, my only companion, my only shelter, my only support. That is how he treated Srimad Bhagavatam from his childhood. And Sanatana Goswami was extremely pious person, very, very advanced with spiritual practices from his childhood. But unfortunately, the superstitious and narrow-minded Hindu society at that time ostracized him. And when they ostracized him, Sanatana Goswami still continued to practice Krishna consciousness at home. And it is said, it seems the class is supposed to, what time the class is supposed to start? Anyway, try to be punctual in your class. Don't be late. It's only three, four days class, and if you come late, then... So, Sanatana Goswami was practicing Krishna consciousness at home, and it is said that whenever a Brahmana came to that area, they would take shelter, or they would take a visiting Brahmana, a traveling Brahmin, used to stay at Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami's house. So when Sanatana Goswami wanted to resign from his position as a minister, the king became very upset. And when Sanatana Goswami was determined to resign and join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the king arrested him and kept him in the prison. And anyway, you all know what happened, most of you know. Sanatana Goswami escaped from the prison by bribing the prison keeper, and he traveled to Vrindavan on foot. Not only on foot, but he was taking the forest road so that no one can actually recognize him, because he was a very well-known person, and also the chances were there that the king may send his men to arrest him on the way. Therefore, he traveled through the forest path and mountainous regions. So, by the time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu already returned from Vrindavan, he visited Vrindavan and he was coming back, and on the way he met Sanatana Goswami in Benares. And in Benares, Sanatana Goswami got to know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, so he went to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the house of Tapan Mishra. And at the time, his appearance was like a Muslim mendicant. He had long beard and he was wearing a dress which was more like a Muslim mendicant. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Tapan Mishra, "Go, there is a Vaishnava waiting at the door, call him in." So Tapan Mishra went out, couldn't find the Vaishnava. So he went back and reported to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "I'm sorry, I couldn't find any Vaishnava." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Was anybody there?" And he said, "Yes, there is a Muslim fakir." So he said, "Okay, call him in." So when he was brought in by Tapan Mishra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately went and embraced him. And Sanatana Goswami didn't want to let Chaitanya Mahaprabhu touch him because he was feeling very embarrassed. He felt that he was very dirty. For so long he didn't shave, he didn't look very clean. And so he told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Please don't touch me, I'm so unclean." And Mahaprabhu replied, "I'm touching you in order to purify myself. With your spiritual potency, you can deliver the three worlds." And then after those initial exchanges, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him to get civilized. So Sanatana Goswami went to the Ganges and shaved up, took a bath in the Ganges, and threw away his old clothes. And Tapan Mishra gave him a new dhoti to wear. But Sanatana Goswami refused to accept that new cloth. He told him, "Give me an old one." So when he insisted, finally Tapan Mishra brought him old cloth, old dhoti. And Sanatana Goswami cut the dhoti into half, and with one half he wrapped it around, he covered his lower part of his body, and with the other half he covered the upper part of his body. And that actually is the dress that the Goswamis followed, Goswamis used to wear. And nowadays, these Babaji's in Vrindavan, those of you who went to Vrindavan and Radhakrishna must have seen, they just imitate those dress of Sanatana Goswami. But that is not appreciated by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his followers. In our line, we do not try to imitate this very, very advanced devotee's dresses. Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami dressed like that because at heart they are completely renounced. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out that color of white is the nirguna, is a situation beyond the material nature. And the material nature is influenced by the three modes, ignorance, passion and goodness. Now the goodness is symbolized by satya. The highest region of goodness is symbolized by saffron. And that saffron is the sign of renunciation. And our understanding is that being situated in the varnashram, accepting sannyas, we will worship the lotus feet of the Goswamis, holding their lotus feet on our heads. So that was the mood of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then instructed Sanatana Goswami, and these instructions were very wonderfully recorded in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in the Madhva Lila, volume 8 and 9, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings to Sanatana Goswami has been presented. So I will request that you all read those chapters very carefully, chapter 20 onwards. Sanatana Goswami asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please tell me, who am I and why I am suffering the threefold miseries of the material nature? Ke ami amare kane jare taputray. Who am I? And why am I afflicted by the threefold miseries of material nature? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied by saying that you do not have any, you are not afflicted by the miseries of the material nature. You are a liberated soul. You are free from this material bondage. But still you are asking this question in order to confirm the fact, confirm the teachings, and also for the benefit of others. A self-realized soul asks questions not for his benefit, but for the benefit of others. Through these questions, the other people, the other listeners, benefit. So, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started to explain that the Vedas basically deal with the three aspects of knowledge. Sambandha, Abhidheya and Prayojan. Sambandha is the relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by understanding this Sambandha, one becomes free from the bondage of matter. It is due to our forgetfulness of Krishna that we have become bound in this material nature. Now, the release from this material bondage therefore lies in understanding Krishna. So this understanding Krishna is the Sambandha aspect of Vedic wisdom. And then how that relationship, the means or the process to establish that relationship with Krishna is called Abhidheya. And to be situated in that loving relationship with Krishna, and by means of developing our loving relationship with Krishna, to become elevated to the spiritual platform, is the ultimate goal of life, and that is called prayojan. So these are the three aspects, sambandha, abhidheya and prayojan, which is the crux of the Vedic wisdom. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to me that there are different ways of approaching the Supreme Personality of God. There are different spiritual processes for approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And those processes are jnana or speculative knowledge, yoga or mystic means of understanding or perceiving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and devotional service, jnana, yoga, and bhakti. Now, due to these three different processes, a few minutes ago I mentioned that one should come to the class in time. So, due to these three different processes, different aspects of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is perceived. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is one absolute truth without any duality. There is no duality in Krishna. Krishna is devoid of duality. But although he is advaita, one without a second, and a personality without any duality, due to our perception, from different perspectives, that same personality appears to be different. Like those three different aspects of our perceptions are Brahma, or impersonal effulgence of the Lord, that is perceived through knowledge. That means when one tries to understand the absolute truth by means of material endeavor. Like those three different aspects of our perceptions are Brahma, or impersonal effulgence of the Lord, that is perceived through knowledge. That means when one tries to understand the absolute truth by means of material endeavor, like with our material knowledge, with our material intellect, when we try to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ultimately we come to the point of perceiving him as the impersonal effulgence. So that actually is the bodily effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, by the external endeavor, we come to perceive him as the Brahma Jyoti, as Brahma, which again one realizes that this Brahma is the cause of all material manifestations. Sarvam Khalidam Brahma. Actually, that spiritual energy of the Lord is transformed in the material universe or material nature. So when one makes an endeavor about about the absolute truth from this material means, through this material process of knowledge, then ultimately what does he see? He sees that the cause of all material manifestation is that impersonal effulgence. But that is actually a dead end. By this external endeavor, one comes to a dead end of perceiving Brahma Jyoti. And he can't go beyond that. So at that time, one, if he is fortunate enough, he makes an endeavor to go internal by understanding that by external means I have come to this dead end. So now, let me go internal to understand the absolute truth. And that in the process of internal realization is the process of yoga. Chitta vritti nirodha. Actually, the big yoga begins with the understanding that now we have to stop all our thought process. Chitta means the waves in the mind. And what are the waves in the mind? The waves in the mind are the thoughts. So the purpose of yoga is chitta vritti nirodha. And on the fifth aspect of the Ashtanga yoga, it is withdrawal of the senses from the objects of the senses. So yoga actually begins by completely withdrawing our senses from the objects of the senses and stopping the function or the activities of the mind. And then one becomes able to go internal. And when he goes more and more within himself, he ultimately gets to perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the Super Soul in the heart. But that also is not a complete realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is only his plenary or his localized aspect, the way he is situated in everyone's heart. But in the perfected stage of Ashtanga Yoga, one begins to render devotional service, which Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita through the verse. After explaining the yoga process, he says, Yoginam opi sarvesham madgatenam paratmanam shraddhavan bhajate jomam same yukta tamavataha. Of all the yogis, one who is engaged in my devotional service, he is the greatest of all yogis. Why? Because at the perfection of yogic realization, at the perfected stage of yoga siddhi, one learns to surrender himself unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is a natural development, because at that stage a living entity recognizes the Super Soul, the Supreme Soul, and he, in the light of the Super Soul, he sees himself as the minute soul. So it's a natural tendency of an inferior to surrender unto the superior, not to speak of the supreme. So, after the yogic realization, after the Ashtanga Yoga Siddhi, when one realizes the Paramatma, then he automatically, spontaneously surrenders himself unto the Super Soul, the Paramatma. And that is the beginning of devotion. In this way we can understand that those who are already been situated in the devotional platform, they already have transcended the Ashtanga yoga practices. They have already attained the perfection of the yoga platform, because they have come to a point which is beyond yoga siddhi. And now through devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when the Lord becomes pleased, then he reveals himself to the devotee in his original form, and that is called Bhagavan. That form of the Lord, or that personality, the Supreme Personality, who is endowed with all opulences, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. So then Sanatana Goswami began to explain this Bhagavan. Who is this Bhagavan? So he first established that original Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. He is two-armed. His bodily complexion is like monsoon cloud. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that Shyam Sundar is not actually blackish. His color is not black. His bodily complexion is not black. But his bodily complexion, according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is like Atoshi flower. Now the Atoshi flower has a deep, deep blue color. It's so deep blue that it looks almost black. And some other place Prabhupada said that Krishna's complexion is not material. So with any material definition, we cannot really understand what his color is like. The closest we can think of or can be defined is like the monsoon cloud or Atoshi flower. But Krishna is the most beautiful Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that Supreme Personality of Godhead is a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. So that is Krishna's original Swayam Roop. Now this Supreme Personality of Godhead has three different manifestations again. One is Swayam Roop, one is Tadek Atma Roop, and the other is Avesh. So, this Swayam Roop of Krishna is he with his original form as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan as the son of Nanda Maharaj, where his pastime is to play with the cowherd boys and cowherd girls 24 hours a day. And there's another very important consideration here is that that region of the spiritual sky, the highest region of the spiritual sky, is like this earth planet, but opposite. Just as the earth planet, here we have 24 hours a day. Actually, that calculation was not exactly 24 hours a day, but they're ashta prahar. A day has 8 prahars, each prahar consisting of 3 hours. So 3/8 of 24. So the day has been divided into 8 different sections, each section consisting of 3 hours. Now there in Golok Vrindavan, the time moves, I mean time has these 8 different aspects. And there Krishna is just like a human being. His original form is just like a human being. In this respect we can consider the statement in Bible that the man has been created according to the image of God. So what does it mean? God's form is like a man's. The original form of the Lord is not 4 arms or 8 arms, 1,000 arms. But the original form of the Lord is 2-armed, just like a human being. So the human being's form is just exactly like the original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now this Swayam Roop again has 2 aspects, Swayam Roop and Swayam Prakash. Swayam Roop in his original form, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is like a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. And Swayam Prakash again, the Prakash has 2 different aspects. One is Prabhava and Vaibhava. So in this way, now the expansions of the Lord starts. The Prakasha of the Lord are of 2 types, Prabhava and Vaibhava. When Krishna expands himself in his own form, then that is called Prabhava Prakash. Like when Krishna was dancing with the 16,000 gopis in Vrindavan during Rasa Leela, in how many forms Krishna expanded? How was Krishna dancing? How many of you know? He expanded himself into also 16,000 Krishnas. And those, every Krishna look exactly like Krishna. But he expanded himself. Now these expansions are called Prabhava Prakash. Similarly, in Dwarka, Krishna married how many wives? 16,108. And Krishna also expanded himself into 16,108 Krishnas, and he resided with every single queen in different palaces. So the same Vasudev expanded himself into 16,000 forms in Dwarka. So these are Krishna's Prabhava Prakash. So we got Swayam Rupa, Swayam Prakash, and the Swayam Prakash has Prabhava and Vaibhava. Now Vaibhava is when it is the same feature, same form, only there is some difference in characteristics. That is called Vaibhava Prakash. Just like Balaram. Balaram looks exactly like Krishna. Only his bodily complexion is different. How is Balaram's complexion? Milk white. Otherwise, if Balaram is painted black, then he would look exactly like Krishna. So similarly, when Krishna as Vasudev, son of Devaki, is the same Krishna, but here he has his dress is different. In his Swayam Rupa in Vrindavan, Krishna is dressed like a cowherd boy, and he feels himself like a cowherd. He feels that he is a cowherd man, cowherd child, cowherd boy. Whereas, as the son of Devaki, he is dressed as a kshatriya, and he feels himself like a kshatriya. So that is the vaibhava aspect. Is it getting too intricate or too complex? How many of you think it is getting too complex? Please raise your hand. I see. So what should I do? Should I skip that? Okay, I'll try to make it as interesting as possible. Actually, I thought it is important that we discuss about this aspect, because actually it is quite intricate, but it is beneficial to get to know these different expansions of Krishna. Since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started his teaching with this understanding to Sanatana Goswami, it must be important. And you will see that when you get to know these different aspects of Krishna, then at least your understanding about Krishna of Vrindavan as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original Adi Purusham, becomes confirmed in your heart. Otherwise, people have confusion. Why do you worship Krishna? Why don't you worship Ram? Or Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu. Or some say, well, Ram came before, so Ram is superior to Krishna. So people have all kinds of misconceptions. Now at least we can remove those misconceptions from our hearts by having this understanding. How Krishna, with his inconceivable potency, expands himself. And then Tadekatma Rup. Tadekatma Rup means Tad Ekatma, that it is the same, but there is slight difference. So Tadekatma Rup or Tadekatma has again two aspects, Vilash and Sansha. Vilash again has two aspects, Prabhava and Vaibhava. In short, the Prabhava aspect of Vilash, Prabhava Vilash, is Krishna when he expands as Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. That is Krishna's Prabhava Vilash. And then from them, each of them expands into 24, this expands into 24 further expansion. So that is the Vaibhava Vilash. Now, Shamsha is Krishna's different incarnations, where Purushavatar, Lilavatar, Gunavatar, Manantaravatar, Yugavatar and Shaktaveshavatar. There are six different types of incarnations. So they fall in the Swamsha category. So I'm sure these six expansions you all know. Or how many of you want to hear about that? Okay. It's a very inquisitive group of students. So Purusha incarnations are the incarnation of the Lord that are related to the material creation. They are Karanadakshay Vishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu and Kshiradakshay Vishnu. Now these Vishnu incarnations are simply related to the material creation. When Krishna wants to deal with the material creation, he expands himself as the Vishnu or Purushavatar. So Karanadakshay Vishnu, as Karanadakshay Vishnu, he lies in the causal ocean. Now just as there is an ocean of water, There is ocean of milk, there is ocean of sugar, ocean of salt water. Similarly, in a much bigger dimension, there is an ocean of cause. Cause is actually a substance. And there is an ocean of cause. And Mahavishnu lies in the causal ocean. And as he breathes, not only through his mouth and nostrils, but from every single pore of his body, these bubbles that are created in the causal ocean creates an universe. Now, you can well imagine how many universes are there. Or can you really imagine how many universes are there? It's actually unlimited, because Mahavishnu's body is unlimited. So obviously in his body the pores are also unlimited. If you say that the number of pores in Mahavishnu's body is limited, then you are limiting Mahavishnu's body. So his pores of his body are unlimited. So from his unlimited pores of his body, unlimited universes are produced or generated. And in each single universe, then he enters. As initially the universe is a, every single bubble is empty within. Then Vishnu enters within each bubble as Garbhodokshai Vishnu. And then he fills up half of the space within that universe, within the bubble, with the water from his body. And then he lies on that water. And from his navel, a lotus sprouts, and Brahma is situated in that lotus. And Brahma is the engineer, the first engineer in the universe. And then, in every single atom and in every single living entity, Krishna or Vishnu enters. And that is his Kshirodakshayi feature. So in this way we have Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, Mahavishnu or Karamdakshayi Vishnu, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu and Kshirodakshayi Vishnu. So these three Vishnus are known as Purushavatars. And they are simply concerned about the material creation of the material universe, material nature. Then Krishna performs various pastimes in different lila avatars, like Nrisimha, Varaha, Kurma. So these are his lila avatars. When the Lord performs his pastimes, like as Nrisimha Dev, he played his pastimes of saving Prahlad Maharaj and killing Hiranyakashipu. As Matsya, he rescued the Vedas. As Kurma, he helped the churning of the milk ocean to get the nectar. As Varaha, he killed Hiranyaksha and rescued the earth planet. So these different pastimes are performed by the Lord in various lila avatars. Then the Lord manifests himself as guna avatars. There are three modes of material nature, and through these different modes the Lord performs various activities. Like the creation is performed by the mode of passion, maintenance is done by the mode of goodness, and destruction or annihilation takes place by the influence of the mode of ignorance. Now, there are three personalities in control or in charge of these three different modes or three different aspects of material nature. And as Brahma, he creates as the in charge of the mode of passion, as Vishnu he maintains, and as Shiva he destroys. Now, although their incarnations, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, their incarnation, Gunavatar, but Brahma and Shiva are actually devotee incarnations. Whereas Vishnu is personally manifest himself in order to maintain. In this respect, Prabhupada gives a very nice example how Vishnu is the main proprietor of the creation. Like, he gives the example that when somebody wants to build a house, what does he do? He doesn't build the house himself. How many of you own a house? Please don't feel shy. So, when you build the house, Lokabandhu Prabhu, what did you do? Did you build it yourself? No. You hired a contractor. You gave the job to a contractor, unless you bought a built, already ready-made house. So, when one builds a house, what does he do? He hires a contractor and gives him the assignment, okay, you build the house for me. And after he completes the building, after the building is complete, then the owner moves into the house. And he lives there and he maintains the house. So the maintenance is done by whom? The owner. Yeah. And then when the house becomes old and you feel the need of demolishing the house, then what do you do? Do you take a sledgehammer and start breaking it? No, you hire a demolition company to demolish the house. So, so in this way we can see it is the maintainer, it is the owner of the house who actually maintains the house. And on his order, someone creates and someone destroys. So from that we can understand who is the real proprietor of this creation? Vishnu. Sometimes people have misconception that since Brahma is creator, Brahma is better than Krishna or Vishnu. Of course, the followers of Shiva don't have anything to say. Like, if they come up with any argument, say he's the destroyer. So how can you say that he is the proprietor or he is the supreme? The destroyer cannot be the supreme. The destroyer destroys under the order of the proprietor. So Vishnu is the original proprietor of everything. And everything actually happens by Vishnu's order. He simultaneously is creating and destroying. Or rather perpetually, I won't say simultaneously, but perpetually is creating and destroying. And that is being done by two devotees, Brahma and Shiva. They are bhakta avatars. Now, sometimes there is no suitable candidate. Usually, Brahma is a living entity. And Krishna assigns him in that position. But sometimes when there is no qualified living entity to take up the charge or take up the responsibility of Brahma, then Vishnu himself takes up the position of Brahma and he creates. Then we have Manvantar avatar. In every Manvantar, actually Manvantar means the Manu's rule. In a day of Brahma, 14 Manus appear. And these Manus are, Manus take care of the creation, of the affairs of this world, and that period is called Manvantara. And at that Manvantara, the Lord appears as different incarnations in different Manvantaras. Different demigods appear. The Indras change at the end of the Manvantara. And new Manvantaras have different Indras, different demigods, different stages, especially the seven stages, Saptarshis. So they are called, these incarnation of the Lord at different manvantaras are called Manvantara avatar. Then there are Yuga avatars. There are four yugas, and in order to teach dharma, the Lord appears in four different yugas. So in Satya Yuga, the Lord appears as Shukla, and he teaches dhyan, meditation. So he taught Kardama Muni, the process of meditation, as Shukla avatar. But he is the Yuga avatar. As Rakta, he teaches the Yuga Dharma of Treta Yuga. And what is the Yuga Dharma of Treta Yuga? The sacrifice. And in Dwapar Yuga, what is the Yuga Dharma of Dwapar Yuga? Worshipping of the Lord in the temple. And who teaches that? Krishna. Now, in this Yuga, in this Chatur Yuga,